How's it going, everyone? You're listening to Free Kick, the official AFLW fantasy podcast. And today we've got the gang back together as we review week 7 and get ready for week 8. Well, we've also just had the grand final. Does anyone want to say a word about that? Maybe Will?
No.
Okay, excellent.
No, it's just a hospital.
Jono, how
pass.
You going?
I'm going good, Mel. Yeah, no, it's good to have you back, honestly. It feels like it's strange that you're saying, you know, welcome to us to the podcast, but I feel like we're welcoming you back this week. It's been a different podcast without you.
Probably 25% less women, I'd say. No, 100%.
I don't know if those maths match how you think it does. Women,
Mel. And you're the one with the degree close to maths.
Yep, so I'm back with my great analysis and insights. I've enjoyed 3 weeks of not really thinking about fantasy, and it's showing. Happy to be back. Didn't have the best fantasy week, but I'm very happy to say that my team has survived well in my absence and got to watch a couple of games for the first time in a while on the weekend, so that was nice.
Mm.
How are you going otherwise, Jono?
Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good. I mean, fantasy ranks are flying. We're about to get uninterrupted AFLW football. There's no overlapping fixtures this weekend, which is pretty exciting. It's been a while since that happened. I will say, though, the one overlapping fixture that I did appreciate was having both of the 100th games happening at the same time. So you can say no one got there first. It happened together, which is a nice moment, I think, for the two players.
I think so, too. That was pretty good. But unfortunately, then couldn't watch both of those games, which is a bit annoying.
Yeah.
What about you otherwise, Will? Did you get to any games?
I did. I went to 2 Geelong games this weekend, and both of them were losses. So, Liam, how was your weekend?
I actually didn't go to any footy. The bad weather scared me off going and watching Essendon against North. That and what I was expecting to be impending doom. To be up 20-0 at quarter time was certainly not to be expected. I didn't believe it for a second. I gave us literally zero chance of winning. And the fact that we were already then back behind North with 7.5 minutes to go in the second quarter, once North had the win, really didn't speak to why it was that we were behind. But we were more competitive than I was expecting. I had very low expectations, and they were bettered. So, you know, it wasn't the worst weekend.
I feel like you were coming in with gloom and doom saying this is going to be a 100-plus point loss. So, I mean, anything is better than that, really.
Yes, anything better than literally the biggest defeat of all time was probably going to be pretty good for what I was expecting, particularly after what we'd done against Fremantle. So, we played better than I said. We played with better tactics than I think we've seen from an Essendon team in quite a while.
Good way to manage your expectations by expecting the worst. Talking about the worst, I'm up first for my fantasy score this week, unfortunately, with a 14-40, which is, I would say, not a bad score just from my loose baseline, but looking at some of your guys, maybe it is on the low end. Quick catch up on my team. My team is in decent shape. I've got a semi-completed back line. My midfield is looking solid. I have done 7 ruck trades in 7 weeks, and I plan to do another. So the ruck is still a source of stress. And my back line's looking okay. My problem is that my bench is making no money for any upgrades, and I don't have a red dot, so I have not been able to VC loop. So overall, probably not in a great position, and that reflects my rank of 844. But I'm happy to say that, you know, went on leave, stayed okay, came back, gained 100 spots. This is better than I was doing last time I took leave, where I just absolutely plummeted and there was no return. So overall, I'm still happy. My good call this week was when I had this emergency situation of Morfitt being out, which I was not expecting. Had to choose who I could bring in for a lower price point, couldn't afford any of the big dogs, and I went with the old reliable in Edmonds, which turned out to be a pretty good pick. She was the second highest scoring ruck this week with her 106, so not bad for her low price point, and made a bit of cash, but I'll probably just keep her around for a little bit longer. So that was a nice save. And my bad call objectively doesn't look like a bad call, but in the context of this week it is, which is putting the C on Garner and putting Lauren Young on field, both of which hurt me a bit here. Lauren Young on field with the 20 was not what I needed, but also C on Garner, I was away for the weekend, so I was not expecting to be able to VC loop or pay any attention. And ouch, like she got less as a captain than Bowers, significantly yeah. less than Gardner. I think she got 69 or something. What? Like doubled, that looks like a normal score. It was upsetting.
Still isn't the lowest captaincy score on a Jazz Garner this season for any of us, though.
That is true. That doesn't really make me feel much better, but thank you.
Yeah. I think Will's just really trying to bring down the vibe.
that's Will being like, I have a friend now and misery loves company.
It sure does.
Oh, well, Will, you're up next.
I am up next. I scored a 14.86, which I was pretty happy with considering I also had a 20 on field for Lauren Young. But what I'm most happy about was a weekly rank of 427 meant that I went up 460 ranks. Mm. So I'm now up to 1,270 overall. I am flying up the rankings, and by my maths, I should be in the top 100 in 3 weeks' time.
I love that.
I hear no complaints or arguments from anyone. So my good call for the week was leaving Shanae Davison on the field. It was only a 47, but for a on-field rookie, I'll take that. Because my bad call was my other on-field forward rookie, which was Lauren Young. And the reason Lauren Young was on-field, because I didn't want to take Laura Stone, who only scored a 37. So I actually left 17 points on the table there. But my blind side for this week was Laura Gardner, 173, highest score for the year. And I think because it was against Adelaide, there was a lot of other strong captaincy candidates. Never really got much of a mention by any of us for a captaincy option, but gee, that would have been a nice one if you'd gone off the beaten track and picked her as a vice captain or a captaincy option.
She was not in my top five captains. She would have been like sixth or seventh. But yeah, it was just like, I was expecting a classic Laura Gardner 114 in an okay matchup, but nothing spectacular. But she was insane. And yeah. Just, again, got zero attention. I think there might be something to the fact that Adelaide at this point in the season, unless they're like really worried about what you're doing, they are trying to work on their own midfield game. They're trying to build in a midfield balance that now has less Anne Hatchard, a lot more Sarah Goodwin. So they are not worrying about clamping down on opposition mids. It's about how can they get their game going. And Laura Gardner said, Charlie Rowbottom, 140-odd, or whatever it was last week, eat my dust. I'll put 30 points on your head against Adelaide. That's pretty insane.
I'm pretty sure it's the highest score for the year. It's pretty nice.
It is the highest score for the year by beating the 165 of Riddell, and I think Noffy scored it as well. So very, very good. Huge. From Laura Gardner.
Who's up next? I mean, Liam and Jono really carrying this podcast here. Good to see that we've got some actual fantasy relevancy. Sorry, Will. but these two are really making our podcast worthwhile. Which two of you scored higher?
I think Liam was the higher one this week, so it does fall to me to be next. I've fortunately not captained Garner yet this season, so my season is yet to fall apart. Give it a few weeks. This week I had a 1,525, which left me with a weekly ranking of 187, and I moved up 11 spots to 44th, which I was pretty happy about. We'll get to why I'm not soon, but for the moment, pretty happy with my spot there. I think my good call this week was grabbing Brooke Vickers, who stepped into the Carlton midfield surprisingly at the expense of Gearin. So that's helping my bench cash gen move over a little bit, because geez, there's not a lot going on in that department. My bad call was holding Zanka. All week I was going, I need to trade her out, but you can't do it after 100. So I guess that's
going up against Gold Coast.
Oh, exactly. So Yeah, but fortunately, I'm trading in another player at the moment who's going up against Gold Coast. So, you know, don't learn from your mistakes. Just double down on them, really. I think she ended up with a 32 Eden Zanker. So, definitely a little bit disappointing.
Yeah, but I mean, 44, congratulations. I mean, up 11 spots, I didn't realize you were already that high, but huge.
Yeah,
very impressive.
I think this is highest rank so far this year that I've been, so I'm pretty chuffed with that. Hopefully we can keep holding on.
Is it the highest rank of anyone on the podcast so far this year, Johnny?
Look, in that case, I might hand over to Liam here because he's had a cracker of a week.
Yeah, after having to watch Jono for all those weeks pit me for what I thought were good weeks, and Jono was just putting together, like, you know, top 100 round ranks week after week, I had a 1580, so that was a weekly rank of 26, and means that I am up 52 spots for the second week in a row, which, based on Will's linear growth maths, means that I will be in the negative ranks next week. I'm up at 42, which means that I am two ranks ahead of Jono and also two total points. So yeah, that means that two total points, two ranks, and two being your spot in the rankings on the podcast.
Look, I think you beat the guy who's between us by about 2 seconds signing up, because you're on the same points, and really you're only one spot ahead of me is how I like to think about it, just for my own comfort.
Whatever makes you feel better, sure.
Yeah. No. We're it's pretty even at the moment. It's pretty unbelievable. You've had a good few weeks catching up, so.
Yeah, I've you were talking about the fact that your trades were carrying you. I have now had two good trade-ins in a row. Last week it was Serene putting my faith in Nick Del Santo. And this past week it was Ash Richards again putting my faith in Nick Del Santo, which, it's such a bizarre feeling given
I can't believe it
that I've previously held. But yeah, I traded in Ash Richards. Ultimately, it was a mistake for who I traded out. I traded out Bonnie Toogood, which was definitely my bad call. I was very concerned by that North Melbourne matchup. As it turns out, I needn't have been, because Bonnie Toogood just played everywhere. For the first time, really consistent. Like, she's done it now 2 out of the last 3 weeks, which is the most times that she's done it in the last 2 years, or basically since 2023. We did not see any of this last year. It was infuriating. I kind of had assumed this role was in the rearview mirror. And so I was like, yeah, I'm really concerned by 30 here. It can allow me to bring in a better downgrade from Beck Ott. And so I went, okay, Bonnie's going to go. Bo was fine, but Bonnie was incredible.
Yeah, no, she was unbelievable. But I think my thoughts on Thursday night in a live episode, where I was saying that she'd had this great score against North a couple of years ago, it was actually a premonition of what was about to happen on the weekend.
It really was. It really was, because the score she had against North last time was 30.
Yeah, it was woeful. Yeah, this is what I had in my mind. Yeah,
you were a seer. You weren't like looking back into the annals of history. But yeah, I've kind of buried the lead here. Ash Richards, amazing. Was on 70 at halftime. Had a very quiet third quarter, and then unfortunately midway through the fourth rolled her ankle. The extent of that injury is currently unknown, so it could be a good call that is tinged with sadness if I'm forced to pivot on my trades after. I was pretty happy with it, if only because she's rocketed up in cash this past week. Her break-even was 40, 42 last week. Putting on that 97 was definitely one where I was extremely happy. And then in terms of my blind side, we kind of already talked about it. North Melbourne actually looking somewhat beatable now in the wind. And I really do wonder if it's a wind or weather-based issue for them, because I'd say that this is the second most beatable they've looked since that Geelong game that they drew, again in extremely windy conditions, that time at Arden Street. I do wonder if it's just a case of the ball control game style and being able to flick to a more run and carry and handball game style when the conditions aren't conducive to high disposal and retention is North's issue. They still kind of romped away and put the cue in the rack halfway through the fourth quarter, but it's probably a kick up there, you know, right behind on how they can actually be beatable in the finals if they don't make some make some personnel decisions, or at least make some game style decisions when they do see these kind of tougher conditions on the horizon, literally and figuratively.
So what you're saying is that if a team wants to beat North in the grand final, they need to just get a whole lot of fans and put them all around the stadium to blow a gale.
I'd say mostly on one side of the stadium. It'd be unhelpful. Yeah.
Exactly.
Everywhere.
Yeah. I think you'd...
Yeah, but what you want to do is you want to change the direction so that it's going towards the end. You're kicking out each corner.
Very clever. Very clever. Yeah.
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 Now implying that somehow North isn't going to have a home grand final is the funny thing, though.
Well, I mean, the win picked up at Arden Street once upon a time. Maybe it'll come again.
But also, there would no way they would have the grand final at Arden Street. It has minuscule postage stamp capacity. But yes, that was a football and a fantasy blindside, because obviously Garner had a really bad score. Riddell got tagged heavily by Alex Morecambe. And I think the fact that there was a tag and there was a lack of ball control and retention for quarters one and a bit of quarter three for North really impacted Riddell's ceiling and also really impacted Garner's ceiling. I think that North were happy to get out of that game. They stuck Garner forward late in the fourth, so she didn't really add anything after three-quarter time. It was a true blindside that I think none of the fantasy community were expecting.
Yeah, I was very surprised. Okay, and then Installerine, our free kick team, is doing better than me, so props to them. We'll move on.
I think they went from being top of the leaderboard last week to bottom this week. It's starting to make sense again, at least.
Good, yes. Are you still doing the trades for that, Liam?
Yep, they get done once. There's no looping. Captain Garner had Barnett's injury, had Zanka's injury. Zanka's crap score. Like, it was just a dreadful week for Installerine.
It approaches fantasy in the same way that I do. Set and forget. Okay, watch and wait scoreboard, Will. Who have we got?
I like that I've been just throwing that again, even though I didn't score the lowest score. Apparently, Mel, the way that it's been changed to by Liam is that the person who finishes lowest in the previous shipping report does the watch and wait. However, it has always just been me.
Oh,
for both of the cases,
because you finished lowest so many times.
Yeah, correct.
I
so
just thought
it
was
is
your
probably
thing.
Just habit.
No, it's a gradual shift that I, as host, was just like, "Yep, we're doing this. You finished lowest ranked. You do the watch and wait scoreboard." So
excellent. Well, as the trade manufacturer of Installerine, off you go, Liam.
Oh, damn.
I like it. All
right. So, up the top of the rankings, we have Rosie's Ruiners once again with 10,663 points. They scored a 1468. They only lead by 31 points. So, that's 2 weeks in a row now where they have dropped somewhat. Top scorer of the week was Watles from Luke, who scored a 1618. Massive score. Top 100. Overall rank, you need to have scored a 1483, and that's a massive drop from last week. And I think that definitely speaks to some down scores that we saw, particularly from some premium so-called forwards and defenders last week, who all apparently decided to put up their worst scores in the same round. In terms of total points, you need to stay on to be in the 100. It's 10,302. Which is exactly 100 points fewer than where I am at the moment, which means that it's exactly... I'm 100 points more, and Johnny, you're 98 points more. Very easy mnemonic device there. Just take mine, take away two. And then in terms of the free kick league update, vague prop W from Kevin G, once again he's leading, sitting fourth overall, scored a 1460. And there are 54 coaches in the free kick league who are in the top 100.
Oh. Over half. I'm loving it.
Yeah, huge.
I think you've got
a pretty sure we stayed at like a third for all of last season. So this is solid.
Yeah, I think we were at 50-51 the last few weeks. We had a bit of a boost over this past round.
Excellent.
Very nice.
Well, the hot topics for this week, we're going to do another Sweet 16. Then we're going to have a look at who is at the end of the line and needs to be traded out, and then some of the top targets to trade in. So, For our Sweet 16, we've once again combined all of our thoughts and come up with the free kick top five plus one for each line. For the defenders, we've got Tilly Lucas-Rodd, Serene Watson, Maeve Chaplin, Niamh McLaughlin, Sarah Goodwin, and honourable mention to Cambridge McCormick. Couple of interesting things here. The absence of Giorgio Stathis, who was D2 when we last did our Sweet 16, which was going into week four. I think we've probably spoken enough about why she has dropped off. But any additional comments?
It all comes down to role.
Yeah.
Basically, was playing a really fantasy-friendly role half back and through the midfield and is now playing as a lockdown defender.
Speaking of roles, another player that's not featuring at all is Shelley Heath, whose kind of 60 to 70% midfield role has suddenly become 30s and 40s and not getting nearly as involved in the ball movement currently. And then the one that I think could absolutely rock it up is Sarah Goodwin, who's currently in our kind of amalgamated rankings at D5. But that 117 she had last week was as impressive a performance that we'll see from any player this year.
Backed it up with a solid 77 as well, so wasn't just a one-off.
No, that's now a 70 either side of a 116, 117, forgive me.
117.
Definitely someone who could go higher, and all of those games have come in wins. Oh, sorry, all of those scores have come in wins for Adelaide. So I think that Sarah Goodwin is still a target.
Yeah, absolutely. She's not in the top six rank on average, but she's third in the rank for the last three games. So she's sneaking up there, and someone we expect will probably be in the top five ranked by average towards the end of the season. A couple of other names, though, that have dropped off. Charlie Thomas we had at D4 and Jenna Richardson we had at D6 last time we did this a few weeks ago. Charlie Thomas, I think, was someone that we were umming and ahhing about where she sits because she's definitely got 70s potential, but we feel that the top five is just moving beyond that. Do you guys feel the same way now as to why she's fallen out?
Yeah, I think she's just going to remain a solid backline player. I don't think she's a must trade out at this stage, but if you've got the ability to upgrade her to a Maeve Chaplin or a Sarah Goodwin or someone like that, why wouldn't you?
Yep.
I think we're beginning to see the impact of Emma Swanson being back in defence full time, and with only having missed 1 week.
Did she miss a week in between?
Yes, she was suspended.
Ah, there you go. That makes sense. So Maeve Chaplin is a player that we've currently got at D3 who wasn't at all on our list before. Another name, though, which I had to go double check this, surprisingly was not on our top six at all a few weeks ago, is Niamh McLaughlin, who has been a, other than a bit of a down week last week, has been a consistently high scorer pretty much since the early weeks of the season, and someone we expect to continue scoring. We've currently got her ranked as fourth, but is anyone more bullish on her than that?
I'm possibly more negative than that, personally.
She's just gone down in score for the first time this season, so I'm sure you're disappointed in as well, Jono.
Yeah, it was actually very disappointing. I think it's a tough one with her because I think if she's playing that midfield role, then she's higher. But the Gold Coast really have a lot of players that have returned from injury now, and they're starting to get congested in that midfield mix. I think a big reason she moved back into the midfield this week was because Claudia Whitford went down with injury. And I think she's only out for a short period, is my understanding. So, you know, it is something where how much are they going to be doing on the sidelines? How much are they going to be playing half back?
It is a hamstring.
It is a hamstring injury for a player who missed the first month of the season with a hamstring injury.
Is it a hamstring?
I think it could be.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
I thought it was the other leg. But if it's the same recurrence, then that could be a much bigger issue.
Yeah, don't know if it's the same one, but for a player who's had hamstring issues this year already, I think that could be, put her in cotton wool, see you next year, Claudia Whitford.
That's a shame.
And does that mean see you next year, Niamh McLaughlin, if McLaughlin's staying in the midfield and pulling up 50s or less than 50s?
I mean, I think it's just one game with a tough matchup. And I imagine, particularly, like, her game is built on being fast and sort of, you know, getting a lot of carry on. But Melbourne is one of the quickest moving teams in the comp, and they play exactly the same style, but all of their midfielders do it. So I think it's the worst possible matchup she could have had. I think after this, she'll bounce back against some of the other teams that the Gold Coast face.
I will also say that when she spent almost all of the fourth quarter in the midfield, her opponent was Shelley Heath. And for whatever reason, and this is more a complaint that I have about Gold Coast, your ruck is actually, and you're able to talk with your midfielders about where you set up to get your most damaging clearance players into the right positions. Whomever was responsible for selling Niamh McLaughlin to go sit 3 or 4 metres on the backside of the stoppage, where the ball was just no tap got there all day. Like Lauren Bella and Lauren Pierce were dropping it at feet. Niamh McLaughlin did not get really near any centre clearances, it felt like, as a result in that fourth quarter. I would hope that, you know, there's a bit of soul-searching tactically done. But yeah, it is cause for alarm, her bit of her role, insecurity and instability. I think the fixture is better for her as a defender. Hawthorn, Western Bulldogs, Collingwood and Richmond with the final four. It's just Brisbane this week, which is the concern, which is also a bad midfield matchup, but it's definitely worse for defenders.
Yeah, it's because she's very expensive. I mean, she did just lose a bit of money, but do you think there's question marks around capitalising on her 988K to upgrade to someone else, potentially Sarah Goodwin, who I think her ownership has skyrocketed up recently, but a Maeve Chaplin, a Sarah Goodwin, a Serene Watson, anyone else on this list, or would you be holding knowing that price?
I think there's some merit to it because with that 49, she's got a sky-high break-even. So it's a one-week trade-out for sure, but it is a luxury. And I think most teams are going to have something far more pressing to deal with. So unless you're really unable to find the cash in any other way or your team is just so well set that you can't do anything else, I wouldn't be prioritising it.
I'm sitting there looking at my team going, I have Shelley Heath, who is of greater concern. The only issue being that Shelley Heath has a great matchup this week in Essendon. Because I think the real Essendon will stand up and we will suck. And also
the real Essendon, please sit down.
Beautiful. It is an awkward one though. It would almost be a case if she was just that little bit more expensive and you could make 100K going down to Sarah Goodwin, I think it would be a more popular and more interesting trade because Niamh McLaughlin is the most highly owned defender, or most commonly owned, defender in the top 1,000 in over 83% of teams.
One final question I have on the defenders is I feel like Carlton players keep popping up in these high averaging positions and we're just like, yeah. Like last time it was Dana Finn in the midfield and we're like, oh, no, don't worry about her. Harriet Cordner is sixth highest averaging for average rank and for the last three games rank. And she has not appeared in, I don't think, any of our top five or top six for defenders. Is this, I mean, it shows that she's got a strong position, she's held it all season, and she's held it more recently. Is this something we actually need to start considering? Because I kind of don't really have that on my radar.
I'm going to put this down to the intercepting defender reliance issue. She's taking a lot of marks, but it doesn't feel like a lot of them are coming from her teammates. And it's the fact that, that last three average looks good, but that's because she's gone 98, 57, 84, 51, 45, 98, 72. So she really is just swinging wildly week to week without much rhyme or reason. I actually say that. Fremantle is one of the best defender matchups. They are a shocking team when it comes to kicking it inside 50. I can't remember if they do, but if Carlton play Adelaide, I would say that picking Harriet Cordner for a week would be a good idea.
No, they've got a pretty tough defender matchup for the last four.
But I think this
Jono,
is one
you look
where
like you had something to say.
Oh, it's how I aim to look. Yeah. No, I don't really have much. I think it's just it's that high variance that I just don't enjoy having in my team. And so, I don't know. I feel like if you time it well, you're going to go really well. But if you don't, you're going to be in, you know, struggling in your rank. And that's just not how I like my seasons to be determined. So.
Yeah. What's annoying is that she averages out to be so relevant. If we had just had her at the start and just sat there and rode the chaos, we could have the 6th highest averaging defender in our side. But no. But that's a good summary. Any passing defender thoughts?
Did we mention that we had Serene Watson at D2? Because I feel like we've skipped that one, and I don't think we've got a clear order for the listeners to know. Would it be helpful if we just ran through them?
I believe I read them out at the start.
Yeah, we read them out off the start. Yeah, but to repeat.
Okay, I must have missed that. Sorry.
Would you like to sandwich it with another readout, maybe?
No, it's okay. It's okay.
No, to recap, Tilly Lucas-Rod at 1, Serene Watson at 2, Maeve Chaplin at 3, Neve McLaughlin at 4, Sarah Goodwin at 5, and then Cambridge McCormick at 6, who would be higher, I think, if she had a better run.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Should we read out the order of them?
Do you want to give it a third go, just for Jono?
I do need the help.
Well, rather than do that again, let's go to the midfielders. So our week 8 preview, combined average for midfielder ranks. We've got Ebony Marinoff at 1, Kiara Bowers at 2, Ash Riddell 3, Laura Gardner 4, Jasmine Garner M5, and Georgia Nanscorn, honourable mention, at M6. This is very similar to the Sweet 16 that we put together looking into week 4 at the week 4 preview. We've essentially got the same 5 players for the top 5 positions, and then it was a close call between Britt Bonici and Georgia Nanscorn for M6. So the only thing that's really shuffled is Bowers has gone up a little bit, Garner's gone up a bit, and Riddell and Noffy have swapped. So we kind of believe the same story is there, and this is the 5 midfielders I have in my side. What about you guys?
Same for me.
Assume all the same.
I don't have Garner. I'm waiting one more week on the hopes that the 69 scored last week will drop her just that little bit more and make her that little bit more affordable. And I'm keeping Ali Anderson in with the favourable matchup against a Gold Coast team that lost 4 players to injury.
Yes.
Yeah, this line to me feels like the most settled of any of the lines. Like, there's a question mark on who's going to be top amongst them, but I think they're pretty far above the next best players in the comp.
Yeah, it feels like a comfortable position in that these 5 have kind of followed us through, and yeah, 6 and 7 have chopped and changed a bit. And we're back to the normal chaos of, oh no, which one do you captain out of these 5 great players? And one of them will go big each week, and it's a bit of a gamble. And you get it wrong, it kind of hurts you. But it's like familiar territory.
Yeah. I think the top 5 average, if you take out Garner's 51 being injury affected, I think they average pretty much all 10 above Georgia Nanscorn, who averages 6 above Ella Roberts. So it's just, it's a different world we're operating in with these high scorers.
Yes, which then brings to our attention that on the rank by the last 3 averages, we've got a few new names who none of us think are really going to stay through. We've got Gabby Newton is currently the 4th highest averaging midfielder, Charlie Rowbottom at 5th, and good old Carlton that never quite makes it into our top rankings. We've got Dana Finn at M6. I actually thought Dana Finn has shown the potential and is possibly a bit underrated. I think she could be someone that stays at M6 or M5 position towards the end of the season. I know they've got a little bit of a tough run, but it seems like she's got some really high ceilings. And I just feel like she's going to be, or not necessarily the highest ceilings, but like quite consistent. And I feel like she's going to be one of those ones that just sneaks up and surprises us, because she has already surprised us a few times before. Any of you other guys reckon she's going to end at top 6 or not so much?
I think it's less necessarily top 6 that she's been very consistently scoring between 100 and 120, which is fantastic. But as we're kind of saying about those other 5, they're all averaging 120. So I think Finn's definitely in the conversation for top 10. Absolutely. just based on the fact that since that 100 run started, she hasn't gone below it. But as you kind of alluded to, I'm not sure there's that ceiling there that can just push her above, say, a Nanscorn, because Nanscorn scored a big 140. Finn probably doesn't have that sort of heights, but a very safe M5 option if that's the way you go for it.
I would say as well, she has played that well, that she will start to become a magnet that is put up in lights for Carlton, as if you want to beat them, you need to shut down what she's doing. I wouldn't be shocked if we've got Geelong this week, if it's Zali Friswell, you're playing a heavily defensive wing tagging role, because Dana Finn keeps beating other teams by taking lots of marks and drifting inside 50. You're not going to allow that to happen, because Carlton look far better when she is more involved. So I think she's passed the eye test more than I think we could have ever expected. It's clearly the year of the Irish breakout. I just wonder if she's almost doing too well and possibly getting slightly too much attention.
Attracted too much attention.
And at this stage, the inside mids are just kind of like hitting, you know, B minuses, C pluses, and it's Dana Finn who's the A plus player at the moment, the one you need to stop to win.
I think now that we've doubted her as well, I'm really looking forward to her going 150 this weekend, just to prove us wrong yet again.
You'd think with the rankings we had, we'd get it right, but apparently Dana Finn is our blind spot.
that's what my gut feel is.
It's also worth noting of those players, Charlie Rowbottom's last three averages greatly boosted by the 147 she scored. She hasn't scored another 100.
Yeah.
Gabby Newton's a player that we talked about a lot early days. Sort of didn't do a huge amount at the start of the season, but seems to be starting to find her feet in terms of the scoring. But we talk about Fremantle. They've got so many players that can roll through there. Ash McCarthy's a player that's played well, hasn't played well at times. I just don't trust anyone out of that Fremantle midfield other than Kiara Bowers, to be completely honest.
That's the same with me in terms of this stance. Will you put Ella Roberts at M6? Is that a pick out of a bunch with no real good reason, or do you have backing for this one?
I just think that
sorry to doubt your choice.
Ella Roberts, yeah, well, now I doubt myself. Ella Roberts played really well on the weekend, looked really, really good, was against GWS to be fair, but I think Ella Roberts is probably the only player with the ceiling and the consistency to do that that can probably challenge Georgia Nanscorn for that M6 to be behind the other big five players, kicks goals, takes marks, does everything in there. I think that, I think she's such a talented player. I love watching her play. So just a bit of a left field one from me there.
I think I was close to putting her in, if in part because Georgia Nanscourt's run is not good for the final month with no easy matchups. The tough thing and the reason why I lent Nanscorn is Nanscorn is never going to be the tagged midfielder at Essendon. It's always going to be Maddie Prisparkis that you're most concerned about being a game breaker. Ella Roberts is always, probably for the rest of her career, going to be the name up in lights to tag, stop, limit, refuse to allow beat you, and force other players on her team to be the reason that, you know, the other team might lose. I wonder if there's maybe one or two bad, like, you know, below par scores, and then there's also a very high possibility of a 130 with a couple of goals in there too.
I reckon there's a fair chance that Ella Roberts is leading the league best and fairest at the moment. She's had an absolutely stellar year, and I can't see how those tags aren't coming every week.
Which would be a bit of a scoring bummer. Yes. Okay. Well, anyone want to talk about the order of the top five? Because I kind of just was like, yeah, same five, move on.
I mean, to me, it doesn't matter too much. The bigger question is there's a couple players that are a little bit lower owned. And when I say lower owned, I think like 70 out of the top 100 still own someone like Laura Gardner. The question to me is it a priority to get in one if you don't have them? And I'd say if you don't have Jazz Garner or Ash Riddell, they're at a pretty cheap price. It's a good time to jump on. But Gardner and Bowers and Marinoff are all so expensive right now. I'm not sure if it's worth, you know, with the limited cash that we have left, sort of blowing up your team at the moment to try and jump aboard.
Yeah.
Laura Gardner.
Particularly Gardner and Bowers both going up 122K. That is a unaffordable amount. Like, I think if you don't have either of those guys, this is not the week to get them.
Yeah.
And you just have to kind of hope that they'll do a Riddell and a Garner and lose a bunch of cash, and then you can pick them up later. I think the timing of when you bring in these guys will make it more rewarding, because if you pay top price for, say, a Garner and then they give you a 69, it's a little bit upsetting. Where if you feel like you've got them at a bit of a discount, I think it'll be better long term. Liam?
No, you did. You summarise it pretty well. And also, fascinatingly, inside the top 100, Laura Gardner is the most lowly owned of the five at 72.
Still pretty high. But yeah.
I know that was definitely the point. It's like, it's definitely an indicator of how high you are. Maybe in a couple of weeks we'll talk about whether or not trading one is out. I think for those who were a bit like me, worrying or considering trading out Laura Gardner in the tough North matchup, I think scoring 173 against Adelaide is probably enough for me to not go early. Because I also just, I'm not sure who I would go down to at this stage.
Mm. Exactly. On the rucks, we have seen an interesting little flip-flop here. So we have unanimously decided that Lucy Wales sits first, and it's a bit of a toss-up between Matilda Schultz and Mim Strom as to who is going to be the second highest ruck, with who have we got here? Will and I going Schultz and Jono and Liam going Strom, which is a flip from where we had it last time, which we put Mim Strom unanimously first, followed by Lucy Wales with a question mark along Ali Morfitt, making an assumption here that Ali Morfitt's injury will keep her out for a little bit longer, and that's why she's not someone that I've considered here. Lucy Wales, pretty much a lock. We saw another really great week from her. She's now... One moment, please. She went up another 137K. She's now the most expensive ruck by a significant margin. Do either of you guys have Lucy?
Jono, do you have Lucy?
Yeah, just a question. If Jono had Lucy instead of Mim Strom, would he have beaten me this week?
If would I had Lucy instead of Strom, I'd be ranked like 10th right now. It's very upsetting. I've made one ruck trade this year, and I regret it so deeply. I don't know how you're dealing with 7 mil. It's honestly difficult. I think she's unbelievable. She just had a career high disposal count with 27 on the weekend, and looks phenomenal. I don't know how she's going to go against the big bodied Mim Strom this week, but honestly, at the moment, she's in unbelievable form.
In unbelievable form, and Mim Strom is down on form. Her hit-out win rate is down about 10%, and I cannot for the life of me figure out why. It's very bizarre. Her marking and her hands still look just as good. But she's just not dominating the hit-outs nearly as much this year. I wonder if maybe there is some kind of injury niggle. There's that like a bit of aggression at ruck stoppages and maybe with some laying some repeat tackles. I'm just loving the fact that after, I can't remember if it was the ruck episode or the post-preseason game episode, I said, of all players that I think could make a Mim Strom-like jump this year, it's Lucy Wales. I didn't do anything
well, we can watch them
for my team.
Jump together.
I certainly said it.
Yeah, this will be an interesting matchup. I'm very keen to watch Freer versus Hawks just to rival you, Jono, but particularly for the rucks. I think maybe they can battle out and decide who gets first rank just in this upcoming game. But Matilda Schultz, that's your ruck, yeah, Liam, has been on some pretty solid form. And I think she's currently sitting half a mil above Strom and Morfitt. If Morfitt's injury is remaining out, she could be a serious ruck to like lock for the rest of the season. Jono, as a Strom owner, would you consider going to Schultz, or would you be only going to Wales?
I'm also a Strom owner.
What?
Yeah, but it's better to ask Jono about it.
I don't think it's a priority. There are more pressing concerns. I do think in time I will make the switch, but yeah, just for the moment, I think I'm going to ride it out a little bit longer just to ensure that it wasn't just a handy fixture, because it was a matchup against Geelong that she's put up this 131. That's pretty friendly for Rux. If she can keep this going, her price may be a bit more expensive, but I'll have a lot more confidence in it, even though I do think she's almost certainly going to be the top ruck from here.
A name that we should give some respect to, one who's already copped a mention, and it's Edmonds. Just to keep it on the radar that she has Geelong into St Kilda in the final two rounds. So I think
I'm keeping her.
Wow, you've cut yourself from at least one avenue of ruck trades.
I'm already doing one this week, but that might be my last.
Never say never. Oh, dear.
Will, any thoughts on the rucks? You've been a bit quiet over there.
I've just got the wrong Wales at the moment, is the problem. Steph Wales has been going all right for me. I bought her in when she was fairly cheap and doing okay, but it's no Lucy. So, yeah.
Mm. Would you swap?
That's it. If I could.
Excellent. It's a fair price. We'll leave it at that. Yeah.
Would you like $50 or $100? Take your pick.
Yeah. Okay, well, over to the forwards then. Our combined week 8 preview top 5 are Zali Goldsworthy at 1, Montana Ham at 2, Chloe Malloy at 3, Courtney Hodder 4, Ashley Woodland 5, and Ash Richards for F6/honourable mention. This is pretty much the same as what we said for the top 3 a few weeks ago, being Zali, Chloe, Montana, and also the same as the current averages of ranks, which is Zali, Montana, and Chloe. So I think those top 3 fairly much locked in. I am very fortunate to have all 3, although I did bring in Chloe Malloy for her very low score and lost a lot of money immediately, but I will just ride that one to the finish line. The spiciness comes on the bottom 3 here. We've got Woodland, who is the same from what we said a few weeks ago, albeit a little bit lower. And Tani Evans and Eden Zanker are 2 names that have not reappeared. Evans got a 53 this week, and Zanker, as one of you has already mentioned, got a pretty low score. Why is Evans not reappearing now, do we think? Because I don't really have a solid reason to not include her. It's more that I don't have a strong reason to include her.
I think that is exactly the problem. I think that she's just a hair below, and the role is variable enough week to week. I think she probably scores a 70 if she doesn't bust her nose against West Coast, which means she sends, scores almost nothing in the first quarter. But I just think it's like I don't know about the ceiling. And I don't feel like I can predict the ceiling. Whereas everyone else in here has a degree of midfield involvement, which does give us some additional belief in their scoring.
Yeah, Hodder and Richards are 2 that, when I was last on the pod, weren't really names that we were talking about that much. And now I come back and they look essential. So I haven't really laid eyes. Well, I watched Hodder for a little bit and she did look phenomenal. And these are 2 names that, you know, are very fitting then for our final run. But given that they have kind of appeared as top 5 potential in the last few weeks, what's the justification that they're going to stay for the rest of the season?
Yeah, so I guess with Courtney Hodder, Brisbane had, there was that article that came out by Gemma and Sarah Black, Gemma Bastiani, basically just doing a fixture analysis of the first half compared to the last half of the year. And Brisbane had the second hardest run to start the year, and they have the easiest run on the way home. I think it really opens up, and we've seen in the last couple games what Hodder can do with that easier run and a little bit more midfield time. And I'm pretty sure it gets easier over the next 3. So I think it's Gold Coast, Port Adelaide, and I want to say Essendon. Let me check that.
Gold Coast, Port Adelaide, Essendon, Melbourne, Collingwood, final 5. Mm. Best run for forwards, second best run for forwards to end the year.
Mm. Mm. Which is, very, very handy. And I think the 80s she's been putting up, she could be pretty consistent with them, which is exciting. Yeah, I'll be keen to see if she can keep it up over the next few weeks, because so far it's been that tackling pressure that she brings really helps those scores, you know, stay pretty high.
Yeah. I guess my selfish question is, given there's only a few weeks left, I guess it's 5 weeks, but has she already gone up so much in price in a short period of time that she's too expensive to grab? But maybe this is a discussion for trade sections later.
I think if you can afford to get her in, she's a great target because of the run that John is talking about.
Yeah. We're sort of in the period where money's still very important right now, but come 3 weeks' time, we're going to be caring a lot more about the points that we've got on field. So if you've got the cash to spend this week, I wouldn't stress too hard about it.
Yes. Another name that's quite interesting, I think, is Jackie Parry, who's currently fifth in terms of average rank and on the last three average rank. She's someone that, Will, you put in your top five or six. Is she someone we should all be considering?
Yes.
Say no more. Okay.
Say less. Seriously, say less.
I just think she's got a very consistent role and is scoring reasonably well. I think the biggest problem with Jackie Parry is it's a bit up and down. Probably less variance than Eden Zanker, not going from 100 to 30s, but probably sitting in that sort of 60 to 80 range fairly commonly. I don't think I'd back it in enough to say, yep, you gotta bring her in definitely in the top five. And she is quite expensive. That is the other thing that does need to be taken into account. She is priced at over $1 million, which makes her the second most expensive forward currently. So at the moment, she's probably priced out of being a really must-have sort of player. But the run of scores that she had from weeks 4 to 6 of 102, 98, and 94 was absolutely elite. So I think that it's a left field option if you're looking for it, but I think there are definitely safer options.
I would probably take Ashley Maloney at 160k cheaper.
I have. Currently sitting at my F4.
Well, there you go. I also think it's worthwhile mentioning that Jesse Wardlaw has had a pretty stellar run of form in the last few games, and Imogen Barnett would probably rank higher for us if it weren't for the fact she just had a 35 and looked really sore up against the Western Bulldogs. Spent most of the second half playing forward, and Collingwood were pretty soundly beaten by that point, so the ball wasn't really getting there whatsoever. A really awkwardly timed one, because her next two matchups for Rucks are excellent, with West Coast and St Kilda. It's just that final three, which is Richmond, Gold Coast and Brisbane, might be a little concerning. I think the bigger question will be for owners, does she need to be traded out? You know, could you get up to Courtney Hodder at 120k more expensive? It's almost a complete sideways trade to Bonnie Toogood. It's a downgrade to Ashley Maloney. I think that's certainly something worthwhile exploring.
Well, I was thinking she's got a good run for the next couple of weeks. She could bounce back, make some money, and then be an upgrade target. We've still got 5 weeks left, I guess. Do you think it's urgent that she's traded out? Because I was almost more bullish on her for the next couple of weeks.
I don't think it's urgent. It's obviously what her injury actually was. We didn't really get much word on what she'd done. The break-even is only 82. So I don't think she's an uber priority. But if you're sitting there looking at your team going, you know, I've got Brie Conan, who's sitting just a hair below the top six, or Imogen Barnett, just a hair below the top six, I think you could definitely make the case for Barnett going out first over Conan.
Fair. Well, that brings us to the end of our Sweet 16. Pretty detailed. I don't know if we'll do another one in the season or not, but that's where we've left off so far. Over to Liam for the end of the line. Who needs to leave our squads?
Yes. Well, I've just mentioned one player, and that's Brianna Conan. 70% top ownership in the top 1,000 coaches. Very popular player. I do, however, think that she's 10 points below some of the other attainable defenders at the moment. So I think that she's a better option at the moment than Shelley Heath, who is another player I think could absolutely be traded out. Also very popular at 67% in the top 1K. But I think the fact that, you know, it's less than 200K to go... it's less than 200K to go to Goodwin, and it's just over 200K to Maeve Chaplin. I would be thinking that if you don't have Shelley Heath, Bree Conan is someone that you could absolutely be trading out. Now, is she better or worse than someone else I think could be considered as a trade-out? In Ash Woodland is a tough one. Ash Woodland started well against St Kilda, but definitely didn't keep it up. Spent an uncomfortable amount of time playing deep inside D50, really frustratingly in that last quarter too. Piper Window and Ash Woodland were both switching one for one in the midfield. Now that Piper Window is back, I would be, you know, I've got both. I have Shelley Heath, so I think she's a number one priority. But open the floor to everyone. Like, who's the more important player to trade out? Is it Woodland or is it Conan?
Yeah, it's a tricky one. I do worry a lot about that changing role with the Port Adelaide midfield mix. I would probably stick with Woodland for one more. That's currently my plans, and I'm trading out Heath. And if I didn't have Heath, I'd trade out Conan. But it's probably due to a lack of faith in some of the other forward options more than it is. I think the defender options are probably better trade targets.
So in terms of price then, for Woodland, it's... I think the ideal situation is you hold Woodland for a week and then you go across to Chloe Malloy, who will be probably cheaper than her by that point. You'll gain a little bit of cash. Chloe Malloy will be free of the North Melbourne matchup, and then you can bank a little bit of cash and it should all flow pretty seamlessly. But I think the fact that Woodland is sitting at a spot where she might also lose some cash, I'm just looking at break-even of 88. That is an uncomfortably high number. She's had above 88 once all year, and that was an 89 against Melbourne. So it's a sticky situation. I think that she will be a popular trade-out option this week. I think the big question then, if we want to go forwards, who goes out, Woodland or Barnett?
I'd say Woodland or Barnett.
Unless we get injury reporting that says
presuming health.
Yeah.
Will, where are you leaning?
Yeah, I'd probably say Woodland as well. West Coast is, as you say, fitness notwithstanding. West Coast, good matchup for rucks, given Barnett is playing a fair bit through the ruck as well. So I think Woodland's probably the greater priority there. But I, again, don't think it's necessarily a priority. I think it's okay to watch for maybe one more week, although I've definitely been stung by that before.
That's fair enough. And then the other players that I think we needed to have a chat about were the Sydney, popular Sydney players. So it's Gardner, Ham, and Malloy. At this stage, Ham...
Trade out Laura Gardner. Get rid of her. Useless.
I knew you were going to say that.
That went so well for me last time. I think it's at this point where Montana Ham has now dropped enough value that, you know, it's not going to actually make you enough to say this is a one-week trade-out, kind of drop her down 200K and you're still getting a premium forward. And then Malloy is even cheaper at 886. I think at this stage you're probably wearing it on both of them. But we'd already kind of discussed it. I'd mentioned it with Laura Gardner being a potential player to trade out. As much as I did then also say that Adelaide are a bit of an easier matchup at the moment because they're not putting a lot of defensive attention in, I think the same applies for North Melbourne. They don't apply defensive pressure. They just don't allow the midfielders to score because they accumulate so much. But at this stage, I think we'd be foolish to doubt Gardner substantially. If, like, you know, some of her best scores have been in diabolically difficult matchup. I'll never forget her 42 disposals against Brisbane, who at that point were at the peak of their powers and one of the toughest midfields to play against. So I think that there is a world where downgrading some of these Sydney players for North Melbourne will be the best option for some teams. I just think it's far less likely than it was about 2 weeks ago. So yeah, those are my thoughts on players to trade out. I don't know if you guys have also thought about some, you know, highly owned players that may need to be traded out, but those were the ones I was thinking of.
Yeah. No, I think those are the common ones. I think there's still quite a few people who are sitting on players like Eden Zanker or Taylor Harris that in my mind can definitely go. But beyond that, I think that's a fair summation.
And I think the one other player that we haven't talked about.
Okay, question for you.
The one other player that we haven't really talked about that I think a lot of coaches probably still have is Ash Centra, who has probably come to the end of the line for their money making. So that's probably something that a lot of people are going to use as a big cash injection this week. I've put the Cash Central as the little footnote for this one because I think, a 47 this week after that big 100, very good chance for making a lot of money to the people that held there through the early stages of the year.
Yeah, no, I fully agree on that one. And you've reminded me of another rookie that a lot of people are still running, potentially yourself included, in Laura Stone.
Not anymore.
Well, yeah, I think this is one of the things where, sure, I think if you're running with the rookie on field and she's your only one, feel free to trade her out. But with the news that Emily Bates is going to miss for a while, I think she's reclaiming her midfield role. So, you know, if you're only looking for 60s, it could be another reason to hold another week longer.
Gosh darn it.
Yeah, the Hawks are really running out of midfielders with Hipwell going down. I think we're going to be running Eileen Gilroy through the midfield is probably the next in. So that's going to be an interesting one. She's pretty cheap.
Had one CBA too against Geelong.
Yeah, I think could be an option. I know she's dropped a lot, but she was a pretty good scorer last year. She's still building her fitness. So that's the one thing that I wouldn't expect too much from her, but just a little quiet option there.
I think I was just going to finish off on this Hawthorn point. I think that the fact that Gilroy is back in this team is maybe the reason that if you are looking like me for a trade from Blaine Bogue, I'm not going to jump straight into Laura Stone because I don't necessarily trust that she's going to get that role right back. But given that next week the Hawthorn play Gold Coast, Hawthorn v Freo, the midfield, will be one of the most important matchups to watch. Because I think there is a forward option there for us in either of Gilroy or Stone. And we probably want to be picking the right one, whoever that may be.
Or potentially Stratton as well.
Well, yeah, that she would have to do a lot to break her way into my team. But yeah, technically an option.
Georgie Pasparkas is giving Ella Heads vibes, or some other players where they're fine. You just leave them in there because they never do bad enough to trade them out, but they're not good enough and you get a little bit frustrated each week. Georgie Pasparkas has once again got 100 on top of last week's 100. She is 56% owned in the top 1,000. It feels like as she didn't even make it on our top 5-6 for the midfield because she is just a rung below, and it doesn't feel like she'll ever be urgent to trade out. But if you have her, I mean, does the fact that we're getting towards the back end make her a bit more urgent because there are players that are scoring 30 points on her each week in the midfield instead? Or would you be happy just to let her continue to sit?
I think you'd probably want to be... Now's a good time to move her across to a Garner if you can do that, I think. It's not the worst one, as you say, to continue holding her. 100's not a bad score by any stretch, but if we are talking about those top fives as being potentially 20 points higher with those massive ceiling scores, you can be missing out on a fair bit of points there.
She's like the 12th or 15th most highly owned player in the top 1,000, which just feels like a lot of people are just going, I'll deal with that later.
And I think she dropped like 60 owners in the top 100 as everyone decided, yes, I'd like fewer points in my midfield by trading her to Jazz Garner.
Hey, I wanted fewer points in my midfield by trading her to Ali Anderson, thank you.
Well, so many options for fewer points.
Cheaper than Jazz Garner.
Yeah, that was the only advantage. I'm like, I've lost out on 19 points, but at least I made 100k there.
Oh, golly. Well, any others at the end of their line for you, or shall we move on?
I think we've already moved across to targets. Like, we've already started essentially breaking down the going toings and froings of Hawthorne's midfield.
Yeah. I mean, we've got a pretty solid list here. Some players we've definitely already spoken about. Lucy Wales, absolutely, if you can get her. Maeve Chaplin, also absolutely, if you can get her. Any North player, yes, we saw the top two North midfielders lose a large amount of money. So great opportunity to pick them up.
So any North player, I assume that means that Blaheen Bogue's a good one to trade in this week, Liam?
Yep.
Excellent. Tessa Boyd, actually, mate, 19's
coming out of her price cycle someday.
Not this week. Not this week, it isn't.
Jazz Ferguson, window. Oh, perfect sorry. Defender option. Jazz Ferguson, perfect defender option, eh, Liam?
Yep, for sure. No, Erica O'Shea is, though, and as is Emma Carney, just because they've got a stunning two games up soon for defenders with Richmond, Adelaide and Hawthorne in their last four.
So I think a few of the options I've been looking at here are more on the sense of we don't have a lot of cash on our benches, and so I can move one player up, but I want to fix up a couple people on field. So I've just been looking at a few options that I can take someone like a Shelley Heath or an Eden Zenker down, and then hopefully that just opens up, I suppose, a little bit more flexibility to get the cash moving in the right direction again, because Zenker could lose a bit of money. So I'm looking at Piper Window, who's just come back, put up a 76 and had some good midfield time. Jenna Richardson's just put up 103. I think the variance is going to continue up and down, but I do think, she's an absolute star player. And if she, with a break even, I think it's 33 at the moment, she's definitely going to be going up in price over the next few weeks. And then the other one I'm looking at very strongly is Taylor Smith, who's only at 600K, so exceptionally cheap. But, geez, if you look at her, even this year, which is, you know, substantially lower scoring compared to last year, her numbers are actually not that bad. If you ignore the losses that Brisbane have been in, because I think she scored a 32 against the Hawks, a 33 against Carlton, and a 27 against Adelaide, she's otherwise gone 82, 48, 66, 62. So I think for someone priced at just 602K, it's fairly handy, and it kind of opens up some money to use elsewhere. So that's one of the options I'm looking at strongly. I think I'm currently sitting on.
Look, it's certainly something.
Yeah, we talk about how good Brisbane's run is. It's a risky one, but if I'm trusting that Brisbane's going to dominate over the next few weeks, playing Gold Coast this week just seems like a risk worth taking, you know?
Yeah, and that went, I know you've already mentioned it, that went so well for Eden Zenker.
Yeah. It did.
There are 11 Smiths, so that means there are 7 clubs that don't have a Smith.
What if there's multiple Smiths?
There's,
multiple Smith
there's not. I'm eyeing them off.
Yeah, not in their some jerseys. Of the trades last year. Yeah.
Eyeing them off. I'm just laser eyes. It's like you move clubs, you must go to a non-Smith team.
I think Brisbane Smith is a good idea. Any other players we're thinking of? I'm temporarily thinking of Nat Grider from Brisbane. She's very lowly owned and she fits my price requirements for trades. That's kind of the only good reasons I have at the moment. But to be considered.
Tilly Lucas-Rod should be a priority target, in my opinion, with Hawthorne's next couple of games, four defenders. It's Fremantle time this week. It's Wharfie time for defenders at Hawthorn. Same applies for big Mac Eardley, who's been playing in defence. Very cheap forward. Extremely cheap in like the 500Ks as a spicy try and make other trades work option. I don't like it, but, you know, if you're going to take a stab, you may as well take it at something. And just another final name I want to mention, Britt Gutnecht scored a 90, had the Serene Watson role, I'm going to call it, when Serene Watson isn't being thrown forward, as the key distributor sitting half a kick off the back of most stoppages outside of forward 50, was often being distributed, got a bunch of handball receives against Collingwood. Yeah, it was a great matchup, but a 90 and looked every bit as good as that. So sitting at 700-odd K, I would love for someone to be outside the top 500 at the moment to take a stab at Brit Gutnek and kind of ride that, because I think it's I think she played excellently.
Well, let's do it.
Love the commitment. You're doing your trades right now, aren't you?
I wasn't even meaning it to be you, but sure.
I love it. Oh, and one more there. Since Eileen Gilroy has been back in the side of the Hawks, Onya McDonough has gone 83 and an 80. I think that's
she was dominant in the second half against Geelong as well.
Yeah, yeah. I think she could put on something special in the second half of this year. So I wouldn't say no to anyone wanting to trade her in.
I would. I had an awful time with it last year. It drove me mad. But also, she's scoring really well, so I wouldn't be shocked if she continues it. But I will not be going there at all. I'm scarred.
Fair. Well, maybe, Liam, you can tell us where you will be going with your captains as we get into Captain's Corner this week.
Yep. Oh, well, it'll be a nice and speedy one. We've talked about all these players so far. I will just say my big misses last week were putting both North defenders at 1 and 2 and then going no Laura Garten inside the top five. But I've got Ebony Marinoff against Richmond at 1, Kiara Bowers against Hawthorn at 2, probably going to be the most popular VC this week if you do have a loophole. Backing in Ash Riddell to come back into form against Sydney, Georgia Nanscorn against Melbourne, seems like that's the kind of perfect matchup for the way that she plays, and then Jasmine Garner. I think we have to back her in to get some form. I think 69 is the lowest score she's had healthy in the last three seasons. And so I'm going to put that down as an aberration on weather and think that she's 100 plus again this week.
So no Laura Gardner.
No, because she is against North. And that is a very, very, very tough matchup. Like, I think we can say she's...
Really tough matchup, much like Adelaide, I think.
I heard Georgia Nanscorn struggled last week with her 106.
Yeah, well, Laura Gardner goes 112, and it's a good score, but it's not one you want to captain, given Ebony Marinoff can go 135, you know, barely rolling out of bed.
No, I know. Just trying to ruffle you.
Oh, well, I'm ruffled. I'm rattled at the moment with the captain's rankings. I keep leaving off.
Good. Frazzled.
I'm catching up those 2 points now. Wow.
sure. Watch us both VC Kiara Bowers and then take that and then have no differentiation whatsoever in our captaincies.
I am looking forward to it being C on Bowers time. I haven't done it all season and I'm like, yes, Bowers, come on down.
Now, your early straight Cs have not worked out this year. I am now very concerned for the scoring potential of Kiara Bowers.
No, but I'm going to VC her.
Okay,
I'm going to VC her.
Okay, good.
Because one, fine. I'm in Melbourne for the weekend for the first time in 4 weeks. And two, I'm bringing in a red dot in my trade plans because I have, hang on a second, I've forgotten her name. That's how irrelevant she is to me. I have Torpe, who is a ruck.
Megan Torpe.
And Torpe, who's definitely a red dot this week as well, which is...
Well, but is she a confirmed red dot for the rest of the season? What if she keeps being emergency? What if she comes on? That would be such a me thing to do. So, no, she's...
That would be amazing if that happens.
I need someone who's definitely injured. So, come on down, Katie Tipping. Thank you for missing the entire season.
Katie Tipping
actually
healthy.
Could be back.
She was an emergency.
Oh, no. I thought I was so solid there. Oh, God. Well, I'm going to need to go back to the drawing board to find another ruck.
Jacinta Hose, who is, I'm fairly certain, out for the year with a back injury.
Okay, good. Excellent. Oh, my God, and then no more rucks. and then I want
to... If you need another 300,000K option, you could possibly go with Zoe Bisanko.
Oh, I'll just go full circle. Just keep looping. Yeah, so that's all I need to say about my trades. Will, what are you doing?
Yeah, I've been tossing up what to do with my Cash Central injection.
Mm.
So trading out Ash Sentra gives me a very handy little nest egg worth of money to do a couple of upgrades, and I've been tossing up which way to go with them. I could upgrade Ali Anderson to Jazz Garner and upgrade Laura Stone to Courtney Hodder, which would be a really nice double upgrade. Or I can do a slightly lower upgrade of Stone to Piper Window and get Jazz Grierson all the way up to Maeve Chaplin to complete my back line, which is what I'm leaning towards at the moment.
Yeah, that does look good. I've got the same question of like, do I finish the back line or do I finish the forward line? And I'm currently going... My forward line
is never going to be finished, so no? I'm just assuming that I'm going to do the back line first.
Just whip on the forwards in perpetuity.
Whip. Yep.
I like it. Jono.
Yeah, so I'll be taking Piper Dunlop down to a 300k rookie. At the moment, that's Gabrielle Beanweg Webster, but that's just because I love her. And I'll figure out who that rookie will be by the time we do our on-air live later this week. And then with my other two trades, I have a choice. I'll either be going with Shelley Heath to Serene Watson and Eden Zanker to Taylor Smith, or I'll be doing the same two outs for Jenna Richardson and Courtney Hodder. So that's a decision I'll be making over the next couple of days.
Oh, what luxury trades these are. Very nice. If only. And Liam in a position of even more luxury, slightly. 2 points more luxury.
Oh, that sounds like luxury to me. At the moment, I'm also looking at getting rid of Shelley Heath. It's just a toss-up whether or not I want to bring in a cheap forward and for Blaheen Bogue and bring in Sarah Goodwin, or is it Shelley Heath back to Cambridge McCormick, Blaheen Bogue to Piper Window, and then Piper Dunlop down to I think I was just going to go down to Tipping because I have red dots, so I'm happy to bring in someone who may actually play.
Oh, so we were going to bring in the same person for very different reasons.
Correct.
Yep.
Nailed
Excellent.
It.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for listening. This has been our week 7 wrap and week 8 preview. You can join us on air later this week to go through the teams live and to hear any last minute trade adjustments, and we'll answer some Twitter questions as well. You can check out the articles on the AFLW website coming out later this week as well, and we will chat to you later.
Bye, everyone.
Bye. Bye.